Heavenly King, Comforter, the Spirit of Truth, present everywhere and filling all things, the treasury of good and giver of life, come and dwell in us and cleanse us from every impurity and save our souls, gracious one.
Thank you, Father. I'll try and make it as entertaining and as quickly as possible. Before I start, there's a few people in here who were on the trip. I have to apologize to you because I have photos of you through these slides. So don't be shocked whenever you see yourself. From the age of 5 years old, I actually entered the altar as an altar boy. And I grew up in the church, so forth, probably after the age of 16 or so forth, started attending fellowship, went to the college, and I think it was for my 40th birthday, I decided to go see what my life has been revolved around for so long. It's been my best trip, and it's been my most uplifting trip that I've had. And because of so many years within the church, it put everything together. It brought all the pieces together, and it sort of reaffirmed my faith, my belief, and it sort of recharged me in a very, very good and spiritual way. So if we start off with the pilgrimage of an Aussie in the Holy Lands, and by the way, that's the photo of an actual street in Jerusalem. If you're ever thinking of going, because we went September that just went past, a group of 50 of us from Melbourne and Brisbane all the way to Jerusalem. If you're ever going to make the pilgrimage, one thing, comfortable shoes. That's all I'll be saying to you. So make sure they're the ASIC gel ones because you'll be needing them. So a way of a pilgrimage. First of all, the most important thing was to receive a blessing. Both myself and Father Nicholas went to His Eminence and asked him that we wanted to do a pilgrimage. Myself from Melbourne, Father Nicholas from Brisbane, we actually went up to His Eminence to ask him if he gave us his blessing that we could organise a pilgrimage for our youth, believe it or not, that we could go to the Holy Lands. He brought no objection. He actually encouraged us to go ahead with us. And this photo was taken just recently when we went back to him to thank him for giving us the pleasure. And in his own words, he said, whatever helps you spiritually, I will always support you. We asked him if we can do it again in the near future, and he said to the two of you, I will give my blessing again. So there is hope for us to redo it. Thank you, Lenny. Now, when we started promoting that we're going to Jerusalem, the first thing people were saying, there's a war happening there. Don't you look at the news? Don't you see that, you know, there's a war breaking out? You're all going to die there. And to be quite honest, some people did not come because they had a fear factor that we were going to die. We're all going to die one day, but when, we don't know. But the thing is that, get over that fear factor because it is quite safe. Although you see the presence of soldiers and police officers throughout the city of Jerusalem and through the Holy Land, we came across no troubles. We came across, it was actually pure sweet sailing. Nothing went wrong. They were there for our security, and we felt quite safe. Many times we used to sort of walk at nights through the old city of Jerusalem to go to the Church of the Resurrection, and safe place. That's all I can say. So if you have that fear of, you know, the end of the world and wars happening there, get over it. It does not exist. This is the Blessed Grip, and this is the fellowship that went. So we were the other 50s. The other 50 were actually the fellowship of 1920 to 1960, the elderly people. But this is actually the youth group that sort of came along with us. And I think we all took something out of it that actually came along with us. The first stop that we did on the very first day was the Pool of Bethesda. As you know, in there, when the angel used to go, stir up the waters and so forth. So we actually went there, which is next to the church of what they call the House of St. Anne. Thank you, Lenny. And here we are walking through the place of the Pool of Bethesda. And that's what's left of the pool. Just mere ruins that have actually have gone there. Thank you, my dear. And then right next to it was actually the house of Joachim and Anna. This is the place where Panagia was actually born. Now, I want you to pay attention to the middle of this photo, how it's got a T with a Greek F. Okay? That is the symbol, whenever you go to Jerusalem, of the Greek Orthodox Patriarch. Whenever we go to church here, we might see the double-headed eagle on the flags. Well, whenever you go there, you'll see this symbol. That sort of takes over. The whole idea is that the F means phylax, guardians, and the T means Tafos, of the tomb. So that is the symbol of the Greek Orthodox Church, that over there, which I'll explain a little bit more later on. Thank you, my dear. Icons. Icons throughout the place was different design. This one is actually inside the house of the birth of Virgin Mary. And this is, I just want to give you an example that every site that there is turned into a church. The priest who's on the far right side, that was our tour guy, who's got the camera in front of him, Father Chrysanthos. He's actually from Jordan, from over there. He was actually our tour guide. Where he's standing is virtually where the psalteri is. And where Vera is at the candles is where like the front door is. So it's very confined places. The churches there are very, very small at all the holy sites. So don't be ready to see grand churches. They're beautiful churches, well, in well iconography, but they're very small. After we left the house of Panagias, we actually went across to the Praetorium. And at the Praetorium, now this first section of it is known as the Roman Catholic section. This is where actually Jesus was chained, whipped, where they gave him the garment and so forth. This is now the Catholic Church within the courtyard where they actually told him and they guard him and they gave him the cross. So from here, virtually, the procession starts on the Catholic Good Friday. Next to that Praetorium is the Prison of Christ. The Prison of Christ is virtually in the same complex, but it's actually shared. Now, this is inside the prison. And if we go to the next one, you'll actually probably see where Jesus was actually seated. That was his prison. And as the icon shows above, his two legs actually went through here and he sat over there and waited to be judged and to be given the thorns and crowns and so forth. This is the church inside the prison of Christ, where, like I said, wherever there is a sacred site, our church is actually established. From the prison of Christ, we went across to the Wailing Wall. Of course, for those of you who don't know, the Wailing Wall is actually the last piece of the wall of the Temple of Solomon. Of course, the Temple of Solomon was when Jesus went after 40 days. It was the most significant thing for the Jewish people. And we actually went on a Friday afternoon, just before the Sabbath was starting, where we got a good insight on how they sort of separate the males on one side and the females on the other. So if you see that far umbrella in the background, that side's for the females, and on the other side are the males. The males tend to pray and put their prayers through the wall, while the females are over there wailing, crying for the wall and the temple to be rebuilt. And of course, that's a passageway for the armed soldiers and some more archaeological sites so they can keep the peace. The way of the cross. After when the crowd sort of disappeared, we went to what was to follow the way Jesus had to walk with the cross. And believe me, it was a bit of a long walk. So I felt sorry for Jesus whenever he'd done that. Now, this is at the fifth section where Simon of Cyrene actually picks up the cross and where Jesus leant into the wall. This is my mum testing her hand to feel what size, if she's got the same size as Jesus, but unfortunately, she was actually disappointed. Jesus' hand was just a little bit bigger. For that reason, this is where Jesus laid his hand on the wall and made the imprint, very famous imprint, and we're just about the same size. So I can say I've got the same size hand as Jesus. These are the streets of Jerusalem. They're very updated with steps and so forth. So imagine back then just rock. No cars travel in there. The only thing that travels in there is early in the morning is a tractor, a very small tractor to collect the rubbish. Everything else has to be brought in by wheelbarrows, carts and so forth. So it's very narrow and very steep, a lot of steps. Like I said, you have to be comfortable in walking. One of our major issues we had was shopping. At every site we went, we used to lose people because they had to go to the souvenir shop. The place is full of it. Believe me, if I'm ever go, don't think that you won't find nothing. There's plenty there to find. So, I mean, I could even find vestments, you know, things that I needed for the church. So, for that reason, you'll always find everything. And then we come to the front yard of the Church of the Resurrection. Now, when we were there, I've been always brought up as the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I got told off. It's not the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Inonaustis Anastasios, the Church of the Resurrection. This place symbolizes the whole resurrection. So I was getting lectures. So from now on, I have to call it the Church of Resurrection because I promised them. This is the foyer that enters in there. But before we could do anything, we had to go visit, also over there, the boss. So we got the blessing from the Patriarch. The Patriarch himself took the time to meet the Aussie pilgrimage. So he came out and we had to wait for quite some time, but he sort of done the duty, the honour to take us all in and to give us all, as you can see, our own little presents and to sort of accept us, and we took a great big group photo. So this is the 50 people from Australia in the Greek Patriarchate in Jerusalem that he's giving us now the permission to run wild throughout Jerusalem. And luckily we got that permission because we actually did. Into the next one, which is the church. Oh, before we go into the next one, the Holy Tomb of our Lord is this pillar on the outside. When I showed the slide of Joachim and Anna, I was explaining to you about the FT, Philax του Τάφου. Approximately around about 80 to 90% of the sacred sites are under the Greek Orthodox Church. They own it, they look after it, and they are the caretakers of it. There's a few sites that do not exist within the Greek Orthodox Church. When Father Chrysanthos, our tour guide, was showing us this actual, which I'll explain about the split in the column, he just wanted to point out something. God's almighty. God's all-powerful. Therefore, God can guide things in his very own way. He goes, the whole reason that we are called the guardians of the tomb is that through the time of St. Helen, the empress who went down there and established the church, up until now, until the future, God has chosen this church that we belong to as guardian of his sacred sites on earth. It is a divine will of God that we look after it. Therefore, he wants us as a church to be present there. So what has all this got to do with that? Was it the 14th century? I can't remember. It was some century. The Armenians decided to get rid of all the Greek Orthodox from the holy site. They actually charged in, swords kicked them out, and threw them outside of the Church of the Sepulchre. It was at the time of Easter. And during that time, as you've probably all heard, the holy light comes into the tomb of Christ. So they wanted to be sole responsible guardians of the light of Christ, the light that doesn't burn, the light that you can touch. Well, what happened to them was when they got rid of the Greeks outside, the Greeks stood outside of the door. Now, this is outside of the door. And hoping that once they got it, they could share it with them. The light that year did not go on the tomb of Christ as it does every other year. But yet these marble pillars, that's very hard to split, cracked open and the light came through there. Therefore, everybody who was outside the tomb received the lights and the Armenians who were on the inside received nothing. From there, they realized that the Greek Orthodox Church are the true guardians of the tomb of Christ. And since then, they've never argued with the situation. They've fought about it and they keep fighting about it from time, but they've never argued that they are the custodians and the guardians of the tomb of Christ. So therefore, these huge pillars, one of them just cracked and the light came through. To be quite honest, if I'm going to take a hammer to throw on those actual pillars, it's like throwing tissue on rock. That's how hard they are. So for that reason, The actual tomb of Christ, which is here, is the one that is in our hands, and as a guardian, we look after it and care for it as the Lord has asked us to. Now, once you go in, this is on your right-hand side. Where that man is standing on the balcony is probably second story. And that light in the background is where Calvary is, where the crucifixion of Christ happened, Golgotha, as I would say. From that part, he's up on the hill. Now, I always imagined that I was going to see an actual physical hill, but unfortunately, over time, it's been developed. The actual site of where Jesus was crucified is where that lady is actually venerating underneath. They've actually built an altar, and on top is the crucifixion, where they actually have Jesus Christ as it is there. That actual spot where the lady was venerating, they actually do church services there. Just before we had went, when it was the site of when St. Helen found the cross, Tutimiu Stavru, Ipsosi Tutimiu Stavru, they'd done it at that altar. And this marks the spot of where the crucifixion actually took place of Jesus Christ. Like I said, whenever you get a blessing, you can get away with murder. Next one, Eleni. So once again, this is where the cross of Jesus Christ was. And right underneath of the cross, they have a little chapel where they show where the rock split in two in that little window. So you can physically, what you read in the Bible and what was taught through Holy Week, you can physically see it. The evidence is there. So there, you can't refute it at all. Now, if you can see the icon that's on the wall in the background, it tells the story the opposite way around, but in there, to your right-hand side is where the crucifixion happened. In front of us is where they actually brought Jesus off the cross and laid him down on the rock. And to your left is, of course, around the corner where the tomb of Christ is. From the crucifixion to the tomb of Christ, you're looking around about less than 150 metres, probably even under 100 metres as well. This is the tomb, the slab, where Jesus was actually laid upon. It is very popular. Here we see the lovely Nectaria venerating the tomb. It is a spot where a lot of people do a lot of strange things. Now, physically, Jesus was actually laid there. Thank you, Lenny. And what people do is they tend to venerate it. It's a place for Jesus. And then they tend to throw all these bags on top. You can see they're throwing all these bags. I didn't get it. I felt left out because I didn't have a bag to put on top. They were putting a bag on top and they're wiping it around. Okay, and I'm thinking, what are they doing? You know, I couldn't picture it. I asked the man who's got that Nike bag, because he was doing the whole backpack. I said, why did you put... I said, sorry, you know, I'm from Australia, so I could excuse myself. I said, why did you put the bag on and just moved it around the rock? He sort of turned around to me and said, I've brought things and I wanted to make them holy. So it was a marketing ploy to say they've been blessed. So sometimes when people go around saying this is blessed like that, this is what they've done. They've just put everything in a bag, thrown it on top of a rock and said it's actually blessed. So you can be full. Around the corner, we come to the tomb of Christ. Every day, they estimate between 5 to 10,000 people visit the tomb of Christ. Of course, certain times of the year, the numbers actually increase dramatically, but they sort of said the smallest crowd that they've ever had was 5,000, which was a good day for them, a quiet day, and so forth. Now, this is the outside, the virtual entrance of the tomb of Christ, with its door shut. This was actually erected by St. Helen herself when she was there, and over the years it's been improved by different emperors and different benefactors. This is the first room whenever you enter. Now, the tomb of Christ is very small. It is probably the size of the width of where you get the candles in here at Hagia Eustathia. So it's a very tight and narrow spot. This photo actually shows the whole story. The very first table that's there is the rock where the angel sat on. Now, in the gospel, whenever we see the angel sat on the rock and said to the ladies, "Why do you seek the living amongst the dead?" That's the rock where he actually sat. So whenever you walk in the first door, that's the first thing you see. The secondary door is where you have to enter to go into the tomb of Christ. People in the old days must have been short, because the number of times I bashed my head on that little entrance, "Ke koma de nevela mialo," as my mum said, is very, very short. That little rock where the angel sat on is actually, during the divine liturgies, we turn that into the altar, and the tomb of Christ becomes the table of oblation. Over here we see Melina kissing the table of where we do the holy altar. Next one, Eleni. And this is the tomb of Christ. This is inside the tomb of Christ. There it is on the side. And once a year, the divine light lights up that whole tomb. The way the patriarch explained it to us was that he just leaves the candles on the tomb. He says the 50th psalm. And usually by that stage, the candles have already lit up. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Do you see the icon of Panagia? Next time when you go there, you're going to pull the icon of Panagia out. Okay? Because behind that icon is the actual rock of what the tomb was. Right now, everything else is marbled. All that is marble rock that's actually around them. They've actually put marble to protect the original thing. They've only kept behind that icon a little cupboard where you sort of, a little drawer, and that's where the actual rock is still in. So for that reason, if you ever go there, you'll see it. That's the tomb of Christ down the bottom, and of course, over the years and centuries, they've sort of decorated it. There it is again with Chris about to venerate it. Of course, you can light up a candle in there, and also take the candles that are actually lit in there, actually candles from Easter, from the holy light that they sort of tend to protect and look after. This photo was a photo of one night when we decided, because we lived in Jerusalem, we used to go every night to the tomb of Christ. It was a 20-minute walk, half an hour walk, Nectaria, wherever you are, I saw you tonight, that we sort of used to take there. This is the first night that we decided to go there. The three ladies that are to your right-hand side, well, it was Nectaria who started it off. She came up to me because that night we were going to come back at midnight. 7:30 they close the tomb of Christ, and then they reopen it at 11 o'clock at night where we go and do the church services. Nectaria asked me, "Can I stay here?" I sort of said to her, "If it's up to me, not a problem." But we had to go and find the abbot. Then Aurea and Angela asked if they could stay. So we went around, we had to ask this person, then that person directed us over there, that person directed us up there. I ended up finding somebody in the tomb of Christ. He told me to clean the tomb of Christ. I cleaned it. He goes, now go see the abbot. So he made me slave it out. When I went to see the abbot, he goes to me, "You came from Australia?" I go, "Yes." He goes, "It's very impressive." He goes to me, "Tell me about the ladies that want to stay." I said, "What do you want to know?" "How old are they?" I said, "They're under the age of 50. He goes, "That's all right." He goes, "Are they okay?" I go, yeah, they are okay, you know, like that. He goes, "Okay, back and stay." And for one night, those three ladies, I think there was how many of you? All up, six? Nectaria? 10? Those were the 10 ladies who were left in the tomb of Christ on their own. So they had the blessing to have the whole site of the crucifixion, the apokathilosi, and the resurrection to themselves for that whole night. They also had the opportunity to go and sort of into the tomb. This photo, I had to put it in. You'll see me, I'm like a shade over there. All my life I wanted to be someone strong and tough, and because we were living and visiting opposite, they gave me the opportunity to be a bouncer at the tomb of Christ. Because we had to give each person 3 seconds, between 3 to 6 seconds, where they could venerate and get out. And my job was kicking people in and out. I felt very proud and happy that I had the opportunity to be a bouncer once in my life. So virtually this is what the tomb of Christ is, the outside door with the table where the angel sat on the rock, which becomes the holy table, and then on the inside, the inner door. Thank you. Moving on, right opposite the tomb of Christ is actually the Church of the Resurrection, where we virtually start off the service, and from there they move into the tomb of Christ. Behind the Greek Orthodox Church, where the Armenian section is, and a couple steps down, is actually the site, and this is the site where St. Helen found the three crosses. It's actually in the same complex, in the same building, and it is the only site that is actually in the Armenian section, where it's virtually open to all the public and so forth. And as you can see, they don't look after it because it's full of wax. Leaving the tomb of Christ, we actually went and visited some of the other pilgrimage. This, my dear friends, is Saint Sava himself. 5th century, ascetic in the Jordan, which we celebrate on the 5th of December, and we had the opportunity there to take a photo. The abbot never gives the blessing for photo, but the only reason he gave us a blessing was that there was a bishop from Cyprus that was accompanying with us in the monastery, and because the bishop got the blessing to do it, we said, can we have the blessing as well? And he sort of said, all right, I gave it to the bishop, might as well give it to you, but don't tell nobody. Don't tell nobody I gave you a blessing. There's a miracle that happens at St. Sava's every day. Although there's a ravine that's there, the water there is very salty. You can't really drink it. When St. Sava was there, he came to a stage where he decided to give up. And he sort of decided to leave the Jordan Desert because there was one problem, a problem of water, because it's a desert. God revealed to him there is a natural bowl, rock-shaped bowl, just there, and every day that is miraculously filled up with water. Not dew, not sweat, it's miraculously filled up with water. And each day, there is enough water there for the day. So when they go in the morning to pick up the water, they know how many people are coming because it's always enough amount. When they see a small amount of water, they know that nobody's coming. When it's nearly full, they know that there's a busload of pilgrims coming, and it's a miracle that actually continues every day through the bowl. This is inside the monastery, and that monastery, I really enjoyed it because no women are actually allowed. No offense, sisters. So it was a good place for the boys to be. From St. Sava's monastery, we went to St. Theodosios, which the bus has sort of dropped us off, and in that place at St. Theodosio, we actually had the opportunity to go to that little chapel that's next to the church. There is something like 60 steps where you go down those steps, and it's actually the place where the three wise men camped overnight when they went to see baby Jesus, the tomb of St. Theodosio, I think that was. And behind where they're taking the photo with Vera and Nectaria is actually where the wise men stayed. Now, the next photo is actually much more important, is these pots and these vases and not the ladders. Why is it so important? Because when you read the Bible, you have to sort of say, did such a place exist? Was such a place there? If it wasn't for archaeology to fulfill that, to dig up and find these sites and find evidence that these places did exist, then the Bible would be hard to sort of prove it out. So therefore, the archaeological uncoverings, which have inscriptions on it, play a very important part to us. From there, we went to the shepherd's field, where the shepherds were actually looking after the sheep. And this is really where the Bible came alive, because from this church I could see the shepherds in the fields, in the rolling fields physically, and you could also see the Church of the Nativity in the distance. So I could picture everything, how it all actually unfolded according to the Bible. Throughout this you'll see different icons. This is actually known as a more modern icon that they've actually done, and I was actually amazed to see the different. I've never seen such beautiful icons in all my life. I thought that, you know, I used to be amazed with what I used to see from Greece, but the different styles and years and centuries, such as this one, which actually probably shows the era of how long ago an icon was actually painted. This one was in the 8th century, so just a century after when where iconography was actually allowed within our church. The Church of the Nativity. Next one, Eleni. Oh, yes. When we arrived to the Church of the Nativity, that's our group that was being pulled back because at the same time the Prime Minister of Jordan was there. So we actually found it a bit strange when we saw all the police cars and security present. But the Prime Minister of Jordan was there and we felt safe and we knew that we were going to have a good time. Once again, the doorways, they're very small. I'm a big man, I'm a fat man. When I bend over, I felt everything in my stomach move. So therefore, I'm telling you, get ready to bend over and sort of squeeze to the side. So you have to be super fit sometimes. This is the Church of the Nativity. It has been ransacked, it has been fired, it has been destroyed countless times. As you can see on the side walls up there, they were pure gold mosaics made out of gold tissue. What's the proper term? Leaf. Thank you very much. Gold leaf. Over the centuries, people have gone and stolen it so they can make a bit of money out of it. So there's bits and pieces. Where the lady with the stick is over there is the original floor of the church. There's Nectari again. She always got in the middle of my photos in my camera. I don't know why. But underneath the altar is the actual place where Jesus was actually born. This is actually the leaf, the gold leaf. So this is made in the 3rd century, 3rd to the 4th century, and it still exists in beautiful condition. So imagine how splendid it would have looked if they all kept it there. But like I said, there's poles with bullet holes in them. There is places where they sort of said that we had beautiful wooden icons here, but they got burnt because somebody threw a cocktail, one of those petrol cocktails inside. This is the original floor, which of course they have elevated this floor so nobody steps on it to destroy it, just to prove that from the time of St. Helen the floor had actually been there, the church. And the star marks the spot of where Jesus was born. That little spot is where he was actually born. On the opposite side of that, there is actually a commemoration to what is known to the Magi that they've actually put. That evening when after they sort of, they invited us to take Vespers with them, and it was quite pleasing to see that the Archbishop of Bethlehem made us welcome and we stayed there for a little bit with Vespers. The next day after we went to Mount Zion. From there it was a Sunday morning this morning. Now, we had some problems here. We could not go to the room where Pentecost happened, because that day there was the Pentecostal church. We could hear them. They were screaming and shouting and so forth. And we couldn't, unfortunately, go there. The King of Tomb, David, is present there. That's not the tomb, but there was a statue in memory of King David. And this is the room of the Last Supper, where Jesus had the Last Supper and we could say the first breaking of the bread and communion. From there, we went to the Church of the Holy Cross. Being Sunday, it was also the Sunday after Tutimil Stavru. In Jerusalem, they go with the old calendar, so we're actually lucky to be there. And there was a beautiful story to this monastery where we actually sort of saw unfolding through iconography the story of the Holy Cross. This is inside the church, and you can see the old icons, and for this reason, I've actually put it in. And like I said, it's just beautiful iconography in there. Okay, this is where the tree was before they cut it down to crucify Christ. How do we know that that tree existed? The first icon shows when the Trinity visited Abraham. And when they went and sat with Abraham, they actually also gave him a plant. Now, the icon next to that shows Job leaving out of, was it Job? No, it wasn't Job. Lot, that's it, thank you. Lot leading out of Sodom and Gomorrah. He left out of that place, and when he left, he went and caught up with his friend Abraham. Abraham gave him the plant that the Trinity gave it to him. So what Lot did, he went and planted, he watered it, he looked after. After centuries of growth, they decided they had to crucify Jesus. So a man came, they chopped it down, and when they chopped it down, they crucified Jesus on the cross. And therefore, that area is still got many trees there, and it's called the Monastery of the Holy Cross, as it is the place where they found the tree of Christ, where it was particularly planted. The house of St. John the Baptist is in a very, very different part of Jerusalem, a more, how could I sort of say, we had to walk there afterwards, a more quiet area of Jerusalem, very quiet area. This, of course, all the housing and so forth have been turned into churches. And once again, through the letterbox, I just want to show that they always have this symbol. Remember one thing. Greece, from the 14th century up until 1821, never existed as a nation. The Greek Patriarchate of Jerusalem did exist. So they've all, through all these centuries, they've been the guardians and always looking after the tomb of Christ. Therefore, it is a divine will that they've sort of been there. Of course, this is a place when Panagia was pregnant. She went to Elizabeth, and St. John, when he heard the greeting of Panagia, he leaped for joy within her stomach. So this is where Panagia came. Unfortunately, this is where the Three Stooges were standing. For that reason, it was very good, because at each church where we were actually going, they were giving us the opportunity to read the gospel of that each place, which gave us a better opportunity. The Church of the Ascension. How are we going for time? Are we all right? I don't want to bore you too much. Fine. The Church of the Ascension. Okay, this is up on the hill overlooking Jerusalem. Being Greeks, we tend to do sometimes things without permits and license. The previous abbot who was at the Church of the Ascension decided to build the church without any permission. He said, there's always wars happening here between Palestinians, Jews. They are not going to know that I've erected a church. So he built this huge church there without any permits or license. And of course, they gave the opportunity to the Jewish government to sort of knock it down. It was a protest of the church there to say it. But before they sort of knocked it down, he had actually built a cellar underneath the church, which he had dedicated to Prophet Jeremiah, because Prophet Jeremiah was actually the one who prophesied the resurrection of Christ, the people coming out of the tombs, and the ascension of Christ. Therefore, it was suiting for that to be underneath, and has remained there as the church. The actual site of the ascension of Christ is not in the Greek Orthodox Church's hand, but it's in a mosque. And for that reason, you have to pay a euro to get in there. So that's the actual site of where Jesus resurrected, and that's Jesus' footprint, size 11. We had to take off a few things. They say you can't step on it, but we all put our shoes to figure out whose foot it will sort of fit in. My brother was a size 11, and we realised it was a perfect fit to a size 11. So Jesus got my hand and size 11 foot. So there you have it. From the Church of the Ascension, we came down to the Mount of Olives. Mount of Olives, a lot of things are actually there. And it was Sunday's Gospel, the morning Gospel, the morning Gospel, where it talks about Jesus, after his resurrection, went to the disciples and asked that he was hungry, that he wanted to have something to eat, and they gave him fish and honey. And it's in a very beautiful and big park over there. And this is the spot where the disciples actually gave Jesus the fish and honey over there. Further down from there was a church, which I never knew existed or this feast existed. Sisters, have you ever heard of a celebration called the Annunciation of the Dormition? Yeah, I never knew that. O Evangelismos tis Kimisios. This is the church. And I found it quite strange that they had all the tropari on the outside. Apparently, before Panagia passed away, an angel came to her, the same way an angel came to her and sort of said that she was going to give birth to Jesus Christ, that she was also going to pass away in the next 3 days. And for that reason, that church was actually built there as O Evangelismos tis Kimisios. And they start the festivities from there. Coming further down from the Mount of Olives, we're in the Church of All Nations, in the front of the garden, is the Eastern Wall. Why did I put this in? A lot of Protestants and mainly Pentecostals believe that the second coming of Jesus will come through the eastern wall gates. When I was sort of standing there and I was sort of saying to Father Christenthorga, so this is all the controversy, you know, that this is going. He goes, but the second coming has already came, referring to the eastern walls. I sort of said to him, what do you mean? And this is why it enlightened me this trip a little bit. I'm not sure if it's the next slide. Can you go to the next slide? Just on the outside is the monastery of St. Stephen's, Doyou Stefano. St. Stephanos is our first martyr of our church. Therefore, he is the first person that a man became like God. God became man, so man can become God. St. Athanasius' teaching. He sort of said, here it is. And just on the outside is where the martyrdom of St. Stephanos happened. So therefore, he goes, the second coming is that the martyrdom of each saint or each person that resurrects. He goes, that's their second coming. And it sort of made sense in a theological way that it enlightened me a little bit. I've written a letter to his eminence to sort of say how much truth is it. He hasn't answered it to me yet, but it sort of made sense to me when I was standing there. So it was a clear thing, but I want to be 100% sure before I continue on this. Just on the outside is the Garden of Gethsemane. These olive trees are very old. They're even before Jesus Christ's time. And, of course, there is a fence around these olive trees because being Greeks, they knew that they were going to attack it some way, one another. There's Kyriaki being held back. Well preserved. Next one. Of course, in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus used to sort of visit quite a time, there was places where he actually prayed. Nick, rather than praying, decided to pose. So for that reason, this is one of the spots where they say that Jesus prayed, but the most important place, which is inside the Church of All Nations, which is a Catholic church, the rock where Jesus prayed on is inside this church. Nectaria, you can back me up on this one. When we entered the church as a group, their power got cut off. They had a blackout. So it was quite interesting to see that. Next one, Eleni. The icon inside the Catholic Church of Jesus praying, and the next slide is the actual rock of where he sort of laid on and prayed. Moving on from there, and just across the road is, that's another slide of the Church of All Nations. And just on the other opposite side of the road is the tomb of Panagia, the Church of Panagia. Now, you must remember one thing. Panagia had no fixed address. She was a lady who actually travelled a lot, and she never had one house. After her son's crucifixion, she was in the hands of St. John, the theologian, which was up in Mount Zion, where she stayed. And throughout the apocryphas, whenever you read, you'll probably hear that she went to Ephesus, she went to Ionotus, so she always travelled. But one thing is for sure, that she was born and died in Jerusalem. So Jerusalem was always her home. Now, going into the tomb of Panagias, there are a lot of steep steps that go down. And when you start walking down these steps, halfway down them, you come across two tombs. One tomb on one side is being Joachim and Anna, and the other tomb, it relapses my memory. Joseph, yes, is Joseph's. At the bottom, whenever you reach, and at the behind of the tomb of Panagias is this famous icon of Panagia of Jerusalem. I've seen it in icons, I've seen it everywhere. They do not do justice when you see the real thing. The real thing is so beautiful, so alive. Even I wanted to capture it like that. You can't. It's whenever you walk up to it, you'll sort of see Panagia had freckles, and it makes it so surreal. And like Yero Paisio said, that this icon is the closest icon to the real image of Panagia. And whenever you do see it, it really does make you come alive. This is the tomb of Joachim and Anna. And then, which is on the steps, we have the tomb of Panagias. Bania's tomb is, of course, enclosed. If you're claustrophobic, please do not enter. It is a very small area. And, of course, that is the tomb there. There was no light. When we actually went in there, it was dark as we all had to have our own candles, luckily for flash. And this is on the outside of Spanagia's tomb where the monastery is. Next one. From here we went to the house of Mary and Martha, where the tomb of Lazarus is in Bethany. The actual site of Lazarus's tomb, the resurrection, we could not go to because it was a Friday afternoon and it's in a mosque. So therefore it is very dangerous for us to go at that time there. But we went to the monastery, which is on the adjacent ground. And in this photo, you could sort of see a big gate, but a small doorway. That's more for security purposes, because it is in the Palestinian quarters, and sometimes they do have a few fanatics over there. This is the rock where Jesus sort of sat on and preached. And it is also the rock where at his feet, Mary sat to hear his word, while Martha was actually preparing, doing the work in there. This is the house of where Mary and Martha was, and actually had the opportunity for them to hear the word of God. That's inside the church. Of course, like I said, every house has been turned into a church. Next slide, Eleni. And of course, it's also the same place where Palm Sunday started off the procession. It would have been a very, very long procession. In this photo, the nun that's with us is actually an Australian nun. She's from Canberra. She's cousins of two lovely ladies who are at my fellowship, and therefore we had to take the opportunity to take a photo with her. And of course, this is an icon depicting of the actual spot of Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus Christ. Here we're going into the Jordanian desert, where we're going to visit a monastery of St. George Hojevitis. The one thing about this monastery is that it's carved in the rocks. I did not go down there, and there was a reason why I didn't go there. It was a very hot and humid day to go down there, and it's amazing whenever you see from far away how they've been built. Some of these photos are mine, Nick Maranaka's, Father Chrysanthos. I've shared and I've got photos from different people. And, of course, this is the place where St. George, not the actual St. George that we all know as Tropeoforo, actually started his monastery. He's one of the ascetics. But in there is the actual remains and lipsana of St. Joa of Romania, a man who escaped from Romania during the communist regime, went and looked after the monastery there because he just wanted peace and quiet, and has been deified. And a lot of Romanians visit this monastery because of St. Jonan. And there he is. He was there, I think, in the... When did communism come in? 1920s? He's one of the more new saints that have actually came up. Now, the reason why I didn't go there is that to go there, it's all downhill and it's quite easy. To come back up, it's all uphill. I'm not the world's fittest man. And when it's 30 plus degrees and humidity, there's no way a donkey's going to carry me. But what makes things even worse is that Vera, who's enjoying her donkey ride, that man's leaning over to her and they stop halfway and they said, "Look, you gave me €5. The donkey can't go anymore. You have to give me another €5. So I knew by me going down there, I was going to be bankrupt. So for that reason, I sort of stayed above ground. There I am on top of the mountain, just waving to everybody going down. From there, we went to the monastery of St. Ierasimo. The good thing about this monastery is that it's actually been turned into accommodation. So the pilgrimage that go there and they don't have a lot of money to stay at the hotels and the motels, they can actually stay out the monastery, and the monastery provides accommodation. And the one thing I loved about this monastery, there is a milk bar in the middle of the monastery. So it really makes you feel back at home. This is an icon of St. Ierasimo, who actually, believe it or not, Israel was full of lions back then. It's hard to believe, but he calmed down the lions. And Simra Yortaz, it is Yorti today, Naton Hiromaste. And the one thing about this monastery is that they're doing a lot of icon restoration. A lot of nuns are actually there which have got the skill of icon restoration, and there they are doing the wall icons restoration, and they're actually part of the patriarchate, where the patriarchate sends them to where there is old iconography to preserve the original iconography, so, and that's really their diakonia that they actually do. From there we went to the River Jordan. The River Jordan is that colour, the green, okay, that murky colour. We're on Israel's side. That church on the other side is in Jordan. So that is virtually the boundary, the borders of between two countries. Yes, there are security guards watching us during this. Now, next one, take it slow here. If you can see behind me, there's a piece of plank of wood in the water. That is the barrier. Whoever crosses that barrier gets shot, okay, by whichever side you're walking to. So the whole idea that they sort of said to us, keep in the barrier. Do whatever you want, but keep within the barrier. It's well, it's man-made, it's well fixed up, it's accommodating. Although people call themselves that they want to go to River Jordan to be baptized, it's really not a baptism, because you only get baptized in our church once. And most of us were baptized as infants. So therefore, what we actually do here is a mikro ayazmo, a small blessing, the sanctification of the water. And from there, we sort of put everybody in the river so they can experience the baptism of Christ. Once you've baptized that, what you know is a hadzi, oh, I forget any word, hadzi, a hadzi, all right? And a lot of Greek names have in front of their names, surnames, hadzi, hadzi Papadopoulos, hadzi. That means that somebody from that family went into the River Jordan and got baptized. So that's where the hadzi came from. So all of us who went there have to put hadzi in front of our surname. So Lenny, our surname is Hadzi Likopandis now. All right? Somebody called us hadzi, but it doesn't matter. We're all hadzis now. Into the next one. So as we've done it, we blessed everybody with the thing. And then I bring you to my role model, Vera. At the monasteries and at every shop, they sell these beautiful garments with icons on it. These are the garments that you wear to be baptized in the River Jordan. Here my model is showing off the garment. Here she is stepping into the garment with the guardian hand, with the priest looking after her. And the next one is where I actually tried to drown somebody, but it did not work. They all go in. And when they come out of the water, you have to help them again. Thank you. Because there's sort of there's so many pesticides and things going through their system now where they get a bit dizzy. And finally, the last photo, they are enlightened. So that's what the whole process at the River Jordan is. But to make things fair as well, yours truly actually gave the Petrahili over to Father Nick, and he also took the opportunity. And if you can see the boys behind me, they're all just beating to kick me in the water to make sure that I actually went under. Thank you. And there we are after we got baptized. You can see each person wearing their gowns, and we all took a photo. There's, of course, changing facilities and everything like that. It was a very nice experience at the River Jordan. But from there, when Jesus got baptized, he went for 40 days and 40 nights into the mountains. We're up on Mount Temptation, and I actually walked all the way up there. There is a cable car that can actually take you all the way to the top, but I decided to do it the hard way, and of course, being wet from the River Jordan, everything just sticks on you like that. But you can sort of see the valley where most of the fruits were actually grown. Now, those are the caves. And those caves have natural insulation. No matter how hot it is outside, they're nice and cool in there. We made it all the way to the Sarandaoro, which is where Jesus stayed for 40 days. He did not stay in those accommodation, although that accommodation at the monastery is available to the pilgrims. And what it is in there is the actual place. This is the first place where Jesus got tempted by the devil. And this is the second place where Mary's smiling at us, that Jesus was actually tempted by the devil. It was a very nice monastery. It is quite rewarding after the long walk up. And this is the church that's built within the rock that's there. That's the priest who's looking after the monastery. At a lot of the monasteries, there's only one or two people that are actually looking after it. So they've got a big shortage of not finance, but personnel. So if you want to live in the holy city, they're more than welcome to accept personnel. And this is us from the balcony. And in the far, far background,
where the trees are, along here, that's the actual River Jordan. So Jesus, after he got baptized,
walked all the way up to the mountain. From there down into Jericho, where we're staying, we also passed through the church of Saint Eliseus and the tree of where Zacchaeus was a very short man, and he climbed up to see Jesus. This is the fig tree of what's left. It's in a glass cage now because after years of people picking at it and sort of taking parts of it, they decided they had to put it in a glass cage, and that's the gospel reading. And this is inside the church of Saint Eliseus, who was a prophet, who actually at one stage when the River Jordan became salty, he was the one who sort of told them to believe in God and brought the freshness water and got rid of the salt out of the water. And there's an icon dedicated to Saint Eliseus. Thank you, Eleni. Jacob's Well. Yes, one of the most fought after pieces of land in throughout the whole of Israel. The actual Israeli people are after this piece of land because Jacob's Well, being, of course, of the Israeli people more, they are the ones who are asking for it. Here at Jacob's Well, we've actually got the relics of Saint Philumenos, which is over here. He was a man who was looking after the well, but because the Jewish people wanted it, they actually came in and chopped him. Samaritan woman. This is where the gospel of the Samaritan woman took place. This is not the vase that the Samaritan woman, but it is a vase that they believe from the time of the Samaritan woman that's actually inside the church that actually was used at the time to carry water from the well of Jacob when Jesus came in. This is the church that is built on top of the Jacob's Well. Now, we were traveling to Sinai Desert. We had to come past the Red Sea. The Red Sea is a place, it's amazing. It's a resort town. Now, the instructions if you ever want to go swimming in the Red Sea, remember, do not jump or dive in the water. It's a no-no. Where possible, use the jetty to enter the water. Enter until you can squat and then lie back gently. The whole idea is that none of that water has to go into your ear or eyes because it builds up tar and it can make you go blind or deaf. So therefore, you can't go scuba diving in the Dead Sea. Do not immerse your head for that water. Do not splash water on yourself or others. Do not drink it. And remember, if you do consume drinking water, it is one beach where I can be a lifeguard because no one drowns there. Everybody floats. As you can see, the people in the background. I couldn't take pictures of them directly, so I told Nick, just stand in the middle so I can take a picture of the guy in the background. So from the Dead Sea, we moved on to St. Catherine's Monastery. The drive from Jericho to St. Catherine's Monastery was about less than 5 hours. A lot of hours was actually passed at the border checking that actually takes place. St. Catherine's, although it's a monastery, they don't have an abbot, they have an archbishop who welcomed us and made us very, very comfortable. In this photo is a photo of the group of people who walked to the top of Mount Sinai. I did not walk on top of the Mount Sinai because I was living as a monk for 3 days in the monastery. I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and doing the church service, which was fantastic for me. But these are people at 1 o'clock in the morning who are making their ways up to the mountain. There was a meeting place. This is the 7-Eleven at Mount Sinai style. Now, why did I put this? They explained to me that when you're walking up the mountain, it takes approximately up to 3 hours, if you take it easy, to walk up the mountain. What the Bedouins have done, that every hole and crack and cranny in there, they've turned it into a 7-Eleven. So you can be walking up the mountain and thinking, wow, this is where Moses got the Ten Commandments, and then you can say, I might as well grab a Coke and a Mars bar. So it's very spiritually and uplifting. It's good to see that, you know, consumer goods have been up there. This is the top of the mountain. Apparently there was over 200 people, and all that they do up there is wait for the beautiful sunrise. There is a church of St. Catherine's up there where they only liturgize once a year. That is not the mountain where they found the body of St. Catherine. This is Mount Sinai where Moses received the Ten Commandments. where St. Catherine was found was another mountain further down. And this is what people wait to see, the sunrise. Over the Sinai desert, there's two shots, and there it is, the beautiful sunrise. And as soon as the sunrise hits up, you have to start walking straight away down because it gets very hot. Apparently the day before when we were there, somebody had a heart attack up the top and they passed away because there's no first aid, there's nothing. By the time the camel goes up, pick her up and come down there, forget about it. So you have to be very fit. And here's Mary holding her staff to say she conquered Mount Sinai. On the way down, they pass through the basin of St. Elijah, where St. Elijah stayed, and many rocks you had to use, and here she's using it as a shelter. Smart idea, Mary. This is it's not the actual burning bush, but is the tree next. They've taken from the burning bush and planted another one, as they explained to me. The actual burning bush itself is in a chapel underneath the altar of the church at St. Sinai, at Yekaterini. This is another tree, and it's exactly the same plant, and it's being grafted. Is it grafted when they sort of take a piece of the tree and replant it? Of a piece. And that's right behind. When we were there, they gave us a royal treatment, and they took us into the Osteophylakio. These are the relics of the saints. When I was taking the group there, I did not tell them where we were taking them. We entered into the church, and they also thought that this church is outside the walls of, they sort of, ah, the Pamis in Ecclesia. One of the ladies sort of said to me, Kanade Leturia yeti mirizo Livani, oreo Livani. They did not know where we were taking. When they walked in and saw the bones, they freaked out in a good sense. Not freaked out to sort of say, they freaked out to say, it doesn't smell, but it smells nice. And when the guide was there, he flashed torches within the bones. And it was the first time we saw actual myrrh dripping, this green myrrh that's actually from the bones. And from certain bones, that green myrrh existed, which was signs of saints. Here we have Osio Stephanos. He's been sitting in that chair for over 300 years praying, and he hasn't decomposed. And he himself was there. Actually, one of the ladies approached him to get his blessing, and she didn't realize that he was actually dead and behind a glass cage door. But it's this experience that you sort of get to fulfill yourself. This is in the compounds of the monastery, of the church, and that little balcony on the side was where the abbot was. The church itself, next one, Eleni. That's me outside of my room, so I had a good view from my room. The walkways, and Nick and Nectari at the Cafe Nil, which is outside the gates of, they've got a Cafe Nil, true Greek monastery. There's a Cafe Nil on the outside. I've taken this photo from the walls of the monastery, looking into the gardens, and in the far, that building was where the accommodation of the pilgrims stayed. But as a priest, you actually live in the grounds of the monastery. The museum of the monastery is a work of art. We'll go through it quickly. This icon is from the 3rd century, depicting Panagia and Christ. Next one, Eleni. Christ himself, the Pantocrator. Photos do not justify. Photos, I'm sorry to say, you have to see the real thing to be amazed of Christ. A young Moses taking off his shoes at Mount Sinai to come. Most of these, the first three icons, are before the 10th century, so that's how early they've been there. St. John of Climax, the ladder that he was there. This icon itself, sisters, you've got to get it at the monastery. It's a mineo, every saint of every year in order from the 1st of September. Vestments, so if the bishop saw this, he'll be drooling like Homer Simpson. If you saw those beautiful, the embroideries that exist out there from emperors from different centuries, it's unbelievable. And of course, an icon of St. Catherine herself. Next one, Eleni. Next one, that's St. Catherine with her soil, the crosses. These antiques or masterpieces, as they are, words cannot describe. How beautiful that they are, and how small and fragile, and yet they've been there since the 3rd century, that they've actually looked after as blessing crosses. a chalice, which I would love to have at St. Demetrios, a gospel. Of course, they're all behind. We could not hold them. This itself is the world famous decree of Muhammad to protect St. Catherine. It is a copy of the original. The original is in a museum, I think, in Israel itself, where they've sort of taken it. It's a copy of it with the handprint of Muhammad to say that this is a real sacred place where Muhammad points to an Orthodox monastery. It's very nice of him. This is, of course, the continuation of his decree that if anybody touches this land of the Islamic faith, does not go to heaven. So there's something we can uphold. The Codex Sinaiticus, the three pages that actually have existed, a book of the original, and of course they had very old manuscripts, and when we were leaving, the final site of Mount Sinai from the bottom. That's as close as I got to it. The Church of St. Caterina, or St. Catherine, inside. Beautiful church, but more beautiful is the relics that they have inside. This is inside the altar now. That is the relics where St. Catherine's actual relics are kept. Every day they open it for the pilgrims to venerate. And of course, with each pilgrim that venerate also gets a ring of St. Catherine. This is the altar at the back where I was changing for the two liturgies that I did there. I found this little table inside the back of the altar and I sort of looked at it. I said, all right, I'll use this to put my vestments on and off and off. On the last day when I actually took it off, this is how nice the monks are. They sort of went up to me, they go, "Θα προσκυνήσεις?" So I go, "Το τραπέζι?" He goes, "Όχι, είναι του Αγίου Ιωάννου του κλίμαξας τα λείψανάκι μέσα." And I was using it as a table, so that's how bad it was. From St. Catherine's, we've done a 7-hour bus drive to the Sea of Galilee. And here we are on the Sea of Galilee, all of us, all 50 of us, boarding a little boat so we can look like boat people returning back to Australia. There we are. We've done our little boat trip over there. You know, by this time we're all like feeling like I'm refugees, but it was good to have that boat ride to sort of calm us down. Next one, Eleni. And then we went to the Mount of Beatitudes. This place is actually the mount where Jesus sort of, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they will see the kingdom of heaven." He said the Beatitudes there. Of course, every Catholic site, which was the Mount of Beatitude and where Jesus blessed the two fishes and the five loaves, you have to pay to get in. At the Greek church, you don't. So that's a big difference for us. You can't go nowhere near it. You have to walk around it. And this is inside the Mount of the Beatitude where they say. The rock is where Jesus blessed the two fish and the five loaves. It was quite funny because Father Chrysanthos at one stage, he goes, "You're not going to church Blusia Evtochevson," which is what we chant after we bless the five loaves at each Vespers. He goes, "I'll tell you when to do it." Okay? Okay, fair enough. He goes, "Go inside, take photos." He walks in, he looks around. Then after he calls us, "Latte, latte, 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 latte." You know, he's this tall Greek priest, you know, bigger than me, both ways. "Elate, elate, elate." He stands outside, he goes, "Can I have a kiklo?" He stands outside and he goes, "Plusi efto." So we start chanting, "Plusi efto." And he walks backwards and he walks away from us. The reason why he walked back from us, not that he didn't like our chanting, he saw the nun running in. Okay? And when the nun running in, she goes up to him and she goes, "You can't chant in the church." And so forth. He goes up to her, "Τι λες, δεν σε καταλαβαίνω." So he played dumb and then she realized that, all right, just get out, like that. So we had that little problem over there when they wouldn't let us even to chant at the church. Next one. This is the modern way that we traveled, the bus way. So none of this walking and hard way. We had beautiful, comfortable air conditioning bus to get us around. At the Sea of Galilee, we went to the Church of the Apostles at Tiberiades. Here we are reading the gospel inside the church. That church is actually one of the world famous church for the Israelis because they've even used it as a stamp. They've got it as one of their monumental and sites by the local people. Beautiful iconography inside. It explains everything that happened by the Sea of Galilee, what Jesus did in the icons, and it makes the church more richer. The three fish with the one eye symbolizing Trinity, using the fish, and of course, when we had lunch, we had a fish over there. This is called the St. Peter's fish, of course, that we sort of had there. And this church itself, is a very famous church. Like I said, the Israeli people love this church because it makes the area looks very promising and beautiful to them. From there, we went to Mount Tabor, where the transfiguration took place. And here is the actual rock where Jesus stood on and was transfigurated. The iconostasi there, that monastery, is run by a lot of nuns that are actually from Russia, so it's got that more of a Russian Orthodox feel, but of course they spoke Greek and English and whatever other language you wanted. And just a warning that when you go to monasteries, please be properly dressed. My brother was in shorts, therefore he had to wear a tablecloth around him so he could wander around the monastery. So therefore it was, this is going, you know, on his 50th birthday. Suffer, Nick. From Mount Tabor, we came down the mountain and went to Cana, where, of course, the wedding of Cana took place. And this is the beautiful spot where Jesus asked the servants to fill the 6 jars holding about 30 to 40 gallons with water. They filled them up to the brim. He said, draw her out. They drew them out, and it was the best wine that they ever had. 2 of those stone jars are in this church where it's you can all go and see. And, of course, it's one of the most popular churches for weddings, being the place where Jesus actually showed that the wedding is honourable. From the wedding of from Cana, we went to the Church of the Annunciation in Nazareth. At that church, they had just finished their Sunday service where the angel of Gabriel went to her and said, Here ke charitomeni. Now, this is coming down from the church, going to the actual spot. And when going there, I saw this beautiful icon I've never seen before, which actually depicts the angel giving the krino to Panagia and Jesus already being in her womb and so forth. That's my mum at the spot. She's waiting for annunciation. All she heard was me screaming, Elate pame. We're going into the bus. From there, we've done a big drive to Haifa, where Mount Carmel is. Carmel is in the Old Testament. It is the place where Prophet Elijah ascended into heaven. And, of course, this is being the spot where Prophet Elijah actually went off and was his cave as well, where he sat and prophesied and went to heaven. From there, we went up to Jaffa, to the monastery of the archangels. When I was at Jaffa, it reminded me a lot of Gold Coast, along the beach, big high-rises, accommodation, and so forth. The one thing about this monastery is that you can stay there, and I think it is the best place to stay because the next photo will prove it. You're right on the water's edge. This monastery in the early days was a place where the ships used to come in and they used to disembark to visit all the sites. So therefore, we had the opportunity to visit this church, beautiful church. It's looked after now by faithfuls from Romania. And, of course, it is the place where St. Peter had the vision of Jesus showing him all the different animals that he can eat. And that icon actually exists in there. From there, we went to Lydia, to the tomb of St. George, the one that we all know very well. The church is right next to a mosque. So they can hear us, we can hear them within the grounds of the mosque. Of course, the chains of St. George exist there, which were a copy, they said, of them, the original chains of St. George that he was gone. And there is the tomb of St. George. The tomb of St. George itself is very well known. In the what I learnt in the Middle East and in North Africa, where it's very highly Islamic-dominated areas, such as Libya, Tunisia, whenever our church wants to build a church there, they'll always name it St. George because the Islamic people have great respect and faith to St. George and they'll never destroy the church. They come themselves and they tend to sort of, they have a custom to put oil on the tomb of St. George, as Father Sofronio was telling us. There is Chris at the tomb of St. George. And next one, Eleni. And a decree of the Islamic people on having a faith of St. George, asking him being a guardian of the Islamic people as well. Father Sofronios is the abbot of St. George, the tomb, and he's also a boy who's been brought up in St. Albans. So he's an Australian boy. The only thing he actually asked me to send him some pies. That's the only thing he misses. And here he's given me a cross where it's got an actual relics of St. George inside the cross. Aha, we're coming to the very end. The bishop in the middle of both myself and Father Nicholas Brown is Bishop Theophanes. As soon as he found out that we were from Australia, he loves Australia. He just loves Australia. He has his sister here. He came in last January to marry off his niece at Springvale. He has as soon as he found out that we were from Australia, the man bent backwards for us, you know, whatever we wanted, whatever we needed. He even came to the hotel and had dinner with us one night. And also it was good to catch up with him, and he showed a great love. So in a nutshell, that was the way of this Aussie pilgrimage. I actually went and walked around through the streets of Israel. As I said at the beginning, a very uplifting, very spiritual. I will do it again. And because being inside the fellowships and inside the church, listening and following the gospel, it all just made things gel together, and it made it much more a pleasant trip. I thank you very much for taking the opportunity of going through all these 280 photos. Hopefully I haven't put you all to sleep or haven't put you off. But like I said, it is a beautiful place to go visit. And whenever you have the opportunity, as a priest said to us, God will want you to come and he will make you come. So therefore, just put it in your diaries so we can all go on a next trip. Thank you. Any questions?
Father, I just wanted to ask why the fish that you had, the barbecued fish, was St. Peter's fish?
They call it St. Peter's fish. Don't ask me why.
So any time you eat fish in the vicinity, it's St. Peter's fish?
Oh, no. There's a different type of fish.
It's a type of fish.
There was one fish that they sort of called the groper, the other fish like that. But this particular fish, they called it the St. Peter fish. I never got to the bottom of it. Why? It tasted nice. It was divine. But why they call it St. Peter's fish, St. Peter being a fisherman there, I guess they've sort of named it St. Peter's fish. So it was good. But why? No.
And can I ask you one other quick question? It's probably fairly useless, but I was wondering, the Sea of Galilee, is that freshwater or saltwater? Do you know?
Freshwater.
Okay, thank you.
Now, actually, there are lakes bigger than the Sea of Galilee. And what prompted me to ask the person who was driving the boat, why do you call it a sea when it's a lake? Okay? Because they just have, the water comes in from the Guyland Heights. It's a big lake. I'm not saying it's a small. And it goes out as a Jordan River into the Dead Sea. He goes, the reason why they call it a sea, because three countries border on it. Israel, Syria, and Jordan. And each country has got a navy in there. Therefore, they call it a sea. I never knew that.
Father, I was just wondering if at this point in time you have any idea when your next trip to Jerusalem will be?
We were planning one for next year. 2014. Before, God willing, if all goes well, we're planning one for 2014 to go again.
Who should we make contact with if we are interested in attending?
I advertised it on Facebook, on my parish Facebook. And then I said it once on a bus trip from my parish, and it got filled. So it's very popular. Even the thing was that we had booked everything before April, and we were leaving in September. Mm-hmm. So everything was booked and paid in April, and we were leaving in September. It worked out perfectly for us. We didn't have no hassle. There was no problems. Nectari is here as well, who was on the trip as well. It was a very nice... There's a trip, and the thing is that I have to thank the two travel agents that sort of done one. If you can't wait until then, my suggestion is the travel agent that we went through was called Brunswick Tour and Travels, a lady called Zoe. She's a Chinese lady who's Greek Orthodox, so don't be fooled. And she made contacts with a lady who was at the Patriarchate in Jerusalem, who we were introduced to, Sophia, and she organised it. In case you want to go on your own, you can't wait, she could probably put you in with another group that's travelling there beforehand. So,
thank you, Father.
Not a problem. I think the one good thing that we had was that when we sort of were introduced, we went with the canonical papers of our archdiocese here, and when we gave to the Patriarch here, their paperwork is like a green light. They don't, you know, when they saw us and they sort of said they are the Greeks from Australia, they let us in the tomb much more longer than other pilgrims. They looked after us in a very way, you know. You could see them kicking the remains and the Ukrainians out very quickly. But us, they'll leave us a little bit longer to sort of have that experience. So whenever you do it through the church, it's much, much better. Through the prayers of our all-holy Father, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy upon us and save us. Amen.